The Magic Podcast, hosted by Lloyd Barnes and Craig Petty. Your all-access, behind-the-scenes insight into the current happenings of the magic industry, where Craig and Lloyd will thrust themselves deep inside your ears every Wednesday to rant, dissect, and give you their raw and unfiltered views on the art of magic. So, lock your door, take out your deck, and brace yourself for the Magic Podcast.
Believe it or not, we're back. Welcome back to the Magic Podcast with me, Craig Petty.
And me, Lloyd Barnes.
It's been 4 fucking weeks.
A month.
A month that we filmed this.
I'm already sick of it.
Normally when you fuck off, I find somebody to replace you with, but I'm so busy. I've been so busy. And I've been on the other side of the world. It's just been... And I was just saying to you, wasn't I, that when we started filming this, in the whole month of August, I had one day when I was sleeping in my own bed. Like I was in Columbus, then Vegas, then Blackpool, then LA with Ryland, and I literally,
sounds absolutely so shit.
Well, you know, I went to your life 6 years ago. I teleported back to Lloyd Barnes circa 2000 and I don't know, probably what, 2016, 2015.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder where you'll be. I wonder if you'll be me in a couple of years' time once you grow up. You know, you'll be like, oh, okay, I realize now it's fucking
house.
Yeah, little hermit.
Yeah, very.
How have you been, man? So I'm just trying to swap my lights out. How you been?
I've been good. I mean, everybody knows now. The big thing is I've been working with Ryland on America's Got Talent, and that whole experience. I mean, I was saying to Rye, that whole experience was just incredible. You know, just incredible. Just the fact that he's 10 and he got a chance to fly to the other side of the world to perform live. In front of, like, I think about 5,500 people in the audience, but then millions of people watching at home. His act was great. Like the magic was really, really strong, and a huge shout out to Phil Smith and Guy Barrett for making that happen. But for me, the most impressive thing for anybody who saw Rye's act was the fact that a 10-year-old could go stand on that stage, not look nervous, and just the stage presence and the way that he commanded the audience and had everything. It was just great, especially the fact that there were a lot of changes over the week before. We lost our luggage twice. His props didn't turn up. We had to change the act numerous times. The script changed. And with all of that happening, he still was able to go out and do that. And I've been performing professionally for 30 years, Lloyd. I would shit myself going into that stage. I would just...
I think it's like there's two types of people, isn't it? There's people that think that doing, because I know how I would fucking die on stage doing it live, right? But there's two types of people. There's people that think that live TV performances, they could do it in their sleep. And then for those people, when you see them, they realize that they just don't realize how fucking shit they are. And then you've got the people that do live TV performances and have been there, done that, and they realize just how fucking monumental it is, like an achievement to perform. Like, I mean, for an adult, even just to perform a trick from A to Z live on television is fucking hard. And like, I know a lot of people do, like, yeah, in any capacity, whether it's for news, TV, whatever, talent shows. And he did it at 9. So anyone that's ever been a fucking troll or a doubter or a hater, it's what the fuck can you say to that? Like, he's...
And
if you're a troll, he's better than you. That's
right. Yeah. For anybody who's not done live TV either, there's a lot of camera blocking. You have like 2 days of camera rehearsals where you're literally, and if you don't know this, like the whole idea is that you have like 2 days of camera blocking where you go out on the stage and you go through your act, but the director's stopping you every couple of seconds and saying, right, okay, so we're going to have to use this camera for this and this camera for this. Right, okay, go back there. And you're having to start and stop and start and stop and be absolutely on it. And then everything is changing. And this happens like a day before it actually goes live. Everything's changing because it's like, okay, we can't have you stand there because of this. So now you're going to have to stand there and do this. And then when you walk over to the desk, you're going to have to stand there. And I know you're performing for this person, but we want you to be pointing towards the camera because obviously that camera is going to be picking it up. So don't look at the person you're actually doing it to. Look at this person because that's the camera that's going to say. And everything is getting changed around the day before because they want the best possible shot. But the amount of stuff that you're having to remember when it comes to that, like, it's just incredible that somebody who's 10 years old can go into that environment and just go, yeah, okay, right, no problem. All right, yeah.
Honestly, if there's any single person that's out there that thinks that it's not very, very difficult, don't forget, with the live TV, the amount of magicians I know that are pros that fuck tricks up, right? Oh, sorry, fucking dropped it, flashed, sorry. You get one chance. Yeah. And either Ryan got incredibly lucky to not fuck up, or he's genuinely really, really fucking good. And the fact that he's done live TV twice now on mm-hmm. two different continents, under the age of fucking 11, holds he now? 10, 9?
10 now. 10 now.
Yeah. 10. 10 years old and 9 years old. Two live TV performances, two different continents, and he hasn't fucked up. I mean, then he came, what is it, fourth on America's Got Talent. Fourth, a British person on America's Got Talent doing magic. He's not even a teenager. He came fucking fourth.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. Yeah, I'm very proud of him. I'm very, very proud of him.
I've seen your cameo.
Oh man, that was genuine. I was just in the audience, and I've seen him rehearse it a million times. But there's so much that can go wrong with that act. There's so much that could go wrong. And when it was all coming together and I was watching the reaction from the judges and the reaction from the audience, I just fucking lost it, man. I just absolutely lost it. I was just so happy. And after the performance, while they were in break, what do you call it? Break, adverts, whatever. Yeah. Howie came over to me and was just like, oh, your kid was amazing. Gave me a fist bump, said, oh my God, that was brilliant. You must be so proud.
I think the other thing which is a testament to Ryan, which I spoke to Matt about yesterday, which is, you said, like, I know you said they changed things on the day, but from when the original trick list or set list effect and script, like, everything was changed for Ryland, like,
oh, everything multiple times.
Matt said it was, Matt said to me that it was one point where you both had to say, or you had to say, like, hang on, this is, you can't change it anymore, he's a fucking 10-year-old.
It got to a point where they wanted us to make a ton of changes like 2 days before. And I was just like, look, no, we can't do that anymore. We've changed it every single day. It's 2 days now. We just need to focus on the performance. We can't
like you were saying off air, I think it's okay to say this, but like at one point, you know, they were going to have like the act be Rubik's Cube focused again instead of being and it's like that kind of change to a professional would piss them off. Like a pro who's been in the industry, they'd be like, oh, my set is polished. I've been doing this for 20 years or 10, whatever it's going to be. I'm not changing it because it's live TV. I know if I do it differently now after doing it for all these years, I will fuck up. And he's 10.
Yeah. I do want to say, I know that there's people out there that slag off America's Got Talent and all the Got Talents, and they say, oh, you know, they're trying to make magic acts look bad, blah, blah, that's why they change it. I don't think so. Our experience on AGT was fantastic. They couldn't have been nicer. They had the director of the Illusionists work directly with Ryland every single day. And a lot of the changes were coming from that person saying, okay, this is really good, but now we need to do this, now we need to do that. And they were trying to make it the best it could possibly be, which is why I was okay with a lot of the changes they were making, because if I wasn't, I would have put my foot down a lot earlier. But the whole experience was brilliant. It's a lot, and anybody who goes into Got Talent, you have to realize that when you get to the live rounds, they're wanting to make it the best possible show that it can be. And they're working with you to make it the best it can be. But you have to expect that things are going to change, because when it comes to live TV, and it comes to, like, the act was originally 5 minutes, 15 seconds. And a lot of the changes came from the fact that it was like, we can't have it go over 3 minutes, because if it goes over 3 minutes, we're going to have time on, because a lot of Ryland stuff was audience interaction. It's like, we're going to be bouncing balls around the theater. That's going to take longer than we think. There's moments where Ryland's asking the audience. There's going to be moments where, you know, we don't know how long Simon's going to take before he says stop. It could be forever. Like, so 3 minutes is probably going to be 4.5 minutes. If we have it 5 minutes, that's just too long, because that's going to be like, so a lot of the changes were cutting stuff down and going, well, what can we do now? What can we take this out? Can we take this out? Can we take this out? So there were changing it. It was very difficult for Ryland, and he coped really well with it. But I don't want people to think that the changes were because AGT trying to screw us over.
They didn't try to jeopardize you.
They were just trying to make it the best possible act for their show that they could. Because they don't, the producers of AGT, they don't know what, despite what people think, people are like, oh, the judges are in on it. They're not in on it at all. Like, not in any way, shape, or form. And a lot of the time, they don't know what the judges are going to do. They know that the judges have the ability to buzz people in the live rounds, and they do. Even though you've gone through, you can still be buzzed. And they just don't want that to happen. So they're trying to make it the best possible act it can be. And that, unfortunately, involves a lot of changes. And anyone who's getting into AGT needs to be aware of things being changed literally right up until the last minute.
I think ultimately, though, we've got a broad range of age groups of listeners, but for anyone that's like in the younger age range, like people born after, say, like, I don't know, the year 2000 or the late 90s, I think magic, like as a societal thing now, is quite cool, right? Like if someone finds out you do magic, you instantly, like, from what my experience is anyway, it's like, oh fuck, that's wicked. Like, can you show us a trick? Whereas 20, 30 years ago, I'm 35, so I don't really remember that much, but like just like coming in the tail end of the cultural shift, like it wasn't as cool. I mean, when I was growing up, I used to hire, well, you know, I still kind of do, but I've made it a very big part of my, like, you know, my day-to-day life that I would hide that I was interested in magic, because it was seen as kind of lame. Like, people seen it as like, you know, like top hat, tails, white gloves, doves. And I think a big reasoning for the shift in attitude towards magic being cool from outdated. And I don't think everyone thought it was outdated. I'm just saying, like, the general image in people's head, you know, a big part of that shift, of course, was David Blaine.
Yeah.
Of course, David Blaine, right? And then Dynamo in the UK. But a massive part of it comes from these talent shows, because the magicians that are going on, they are genuinely good magicians. They're giving them exposure.
Yeah.
Shows like Penn and Teller as well at the same time, which again, it's like a talent show, right? It's a contest, see if you can fool them, but also P&T say they use it as a platform to give good magicians exposure. And overall, like, these talent shows are a good thing for magic. They show that, they just show it in a light that people don't realize you could do cool tricks that you don't have. I mean, not that pulling a rabbit or a dove out of a silk isn't cool, but like, you know, Dynamo putting a mobile phone in a glass bottle, or Dave Lay doing a card through window, there's something about that which is or seeing a kid do magic with like Lego and Harry Potter and stuff that kids are actually interested in. The parents watching it are like, oh, okay, I realize it's not about magic wands specifically, or like top hat and tails. Like, you can just, and I think it's a good thing. I think it's good for people to see that magic is like that. But it's kind of like a preaching to the converted at this point in time. But,
well, we got back on Friday night and ride gigs more than most people. And we got back into the house about 10:30 Friday night, and he went straight to bed. And then the next day we were up at like 7 o'clock because he was performing in Cambridge the next day for a corporate event. And it was like a corporate fun day. He had his own custom built stage, 400 or 500 people outside. Probably about 300-350 adults, and the rest like teenagers and younger kids and so on and so forth. And he was booked to do his show dressed as Harry Potter. So he had to do like a 1-hour show dressed as Harry Potter. And I watched him do this show. And literally, you know, if you've never performed outside, it's hard anyway, especially in the baking heat. Then when you've got a mixed age of children and adults, and it's a corporate event, and there's tons of other stuff going on as well, and just watching everybody hang off his every word. And he was, you know, he wasn't doing a kid show. He was doing stuff like Venom Cube, Dancing Kane, Dancing Hank. You know, he did some of the stuff from AGT. He did the Lego table. You know, just watching him do that, it shows just how much people love magic, because everybody was just sitting there transfixed for the entire show. And I think magic is in a really good place right now. You know, there's people out there that will go, magic is dead, magic is dying. No, it's not. It's in a better place now than it ever has been. So many people love magic. They want to see magic. They want to book magicians. And like you say, Lloyd, a big part of that is the talent shows and everything, the way it's perceived these days. It's cool. It's cool again, which is great.
Yeah, so incredible experience there.
And that also, by the way, trickles down into the magic industry. I know that there's, you know, a company out there that remain nameless that say that, you know, the industry is slow at the moment when it comes to sales and it comes to people buying tricks. As far as I can tell, looking at the stats on my channel, more people are getting into magic than ever before. Like, and more people are buying magic than ever before.
I know for a fact that in terms of like magic industry sales, that they are in a golden era. And COVID was really, I think, the main player in that. And it was separated the wheat from the chaff, I think. And I know some companies think that it's dead, and it's kind of like them unknowingly sort of letting people know that they are the only ones suffering. But I think, I mean, who gives a shit about that, right? Like, the byproduct overall is that more people globally are doing and watching magic than ever before in human history. Whether they watch it on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, whether they watch it on Britain's Got Talent, America's Got Talent, Penn and Teller Fool Us on their 10th season. We are living through a golden era, right?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are.
It's amazing to experience, and I'm really glad that it's turned out this way. I think I don't know, it could have gone a completely different route. You know, I used to do a lot of like rollerblading. I was a skater, like aggressive inline skating, flips and shit, and I stopped doing that when I was like, I don't know, 18, 19 or something. And I recently like looked back into what the industry looks like for that now, and it's dead. Like, all the people that were professionals stopped being professionals, but no one took their places. There's no money in the sport, and the whole industry has declined. Like, they don't have any of the main companies that were involved in it anymore. And it's just really like, it was. I never thought that would happen to it, but I wonder, like, you know, because there was a boom for about 10 years, and I wonder if that's going to happen to magic, or what's going to happen to it. And I wonder, like, if say instead of David Blaine getting famous, you know, it could have been somebody who did, you know, stage magic that got like because it was really viral before virality was a thing. But if it was a top hat and tails magician that went viral, what state would the magic industry look like right now? And I love the way that magic is at the minute, and I think we're just very, very lucky to be here. And unfortunately, some companies are going to suffer because they don't, you know, they don't keep up with the times, and they just don't strike the right chord with their audience, or, you know, and that's just the way the circle of life works. But yeah. I'm really fucking, for me at least personally, and for the like the company like I represent and stuff, and for the general magic consumer, I don't think magicians as a whole realize how lucky we are at the minute. No. And we won't until there's going to be a natural drop off. I thought it would have happened.
There's ebbs and flows, there's peaks, there's troughs, there's valleys, there's, you know, it's always the same way. I've seen it. I've seen the industry bottom down. I've seen it rise up, and it's just, you know, it's the same with everything. You know, I know you're not a fan of wrestling. I am. And, you know, right now we're in a boom period when it comes to wrestling with WWE AEW just flying high. Like, AEW just went and worked the Wembley Stadium and had, like, you know, 85,000 fans in attendance in the UK just watching a wrestling event. Like, it's the stock market on WWE shares are going through the roof. But about 5 or 6 years ago, it was tanked. It was like really in the gutter, you know, less people watching wrestling than ever before. And I think it's the same with magic. I think there's always going to be people that are a constant, like me. I've been watching wrestling since the 1980s, and I'm never going to stop. But then there's people that come into it and people that go out of it. One thing that I'm seeing a lot at the moment, which is really good, which I think is a big thing for magic, is the way that younger people are being encouraged into magic. Like over in the US, I was in LA, and I got a chance to hang out. The kids that were on stage helping Ryland, they were from the Magic Castle Junior, the Magic Castle Juniors. And I was hanging out with them for a few days, and they were showing me magic, and I was blown away by their skills. Like they were showing me stuff that I've never seen before, like just blowing me away. And they were like, oh yeah, we came up with this. Well, you came up with it. Is it published anywhere? No, it's just something I came up with. And I see the same at the YMC in London. You know, Ryland goes to the YMC every month, the Young Magicians Club, part of the Magic Circle. And the kids that go there are just unbelievable. I think that that's going to be one of the reasons, because kids have got disposable income as well. They're the ones that buy the magic. You know, they want to learn new tricks. They want to immerse themselves in the latest thing. And, you know, as long as we continue to put the focus on the kids and the younger people and the newer people getting into magic, I think we're going to be in safe hands. And, you know, I've seen it happen, because Ryland's really big on Instagram and Facebook, and he's got a big reach, and Sarah manages account, but I see a lot of the comments, the amount of people that comment on Ryland's videos that go, oh, I got into magic because of you. I saw you on Britain's Got Talent. I saw you on America's Got Talent. I see your videos on social media, and I got into magic because of you. And they're like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and they're the ones getting into magic. And that's why social media is so good. You know, all of these magicians that go, social media is bad for magic. No, it's not. No, it's not, because as an industry, we need to grow. You know, more people coming into magic means more products being sold, which means more creators, which means more tricks, which means more interest in magic, more people are booking it. And, you know, I think that social media is a big part to play with that as well.
The thing is, it's not going anywhere. You can't put the feathers back in the pillowcase. You know, if it's that analogy on that film, whatever, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. It's always going to be there. Not going anywhere. Same as when you have people exposing tricks that are not theirs on YouTube and Facebook. It's not going there. But you can sit in your ass and complain about it, or you can adapt to the times and work with it. Like, become a pro at social media. Use it to get more bookings. Use it to get more shows. You use it to build your following, whatever you're going to do. But, you know, it's either adapt or die.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean?
Totally agree.
But anyway, we could talk about this for hours. I think we're preaching to the converted. Anyone listening to this podcast, I think it's pretty switched on.
What else has been going on in the last 4 weeks, like, that we can talk about? I mean, obviously, if you want to quickly mention about our favorite subject, Rick Lax. By the way, don't fuck kids. But Rick Lax is.
Well, should we just leave that for sorry, not sorry? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay, let's do that. Sorry, not sorry. Okay, let's keep it upbeat. What else we got?
Well, it's new products normally after the intro. I've just been super busy. I got Dex coming up, so working on Dex and working on selling my house at the same time. Kind of stressful. But apart from that, it's all new products.
Dex is coming out soon, right? Have you got a launch date?
Yeah, the 18th of September. 18th of September, half of 7.
Man, that's great.
Kind of shitting myself for it, because at least with Dex, like with like Lux and Cognito, we kept it what it was, completely quiet until the launch. Well, at least with Dex, everyone knows exactly what it is in minute detail, except for pretty much what it looks like. You know, like this very, very, very specific technical details of it. So people know what the fuss is about. People know what they want. People know what it can do. I'm just kind of nervous because, like, two reasons. And I keep saying, like, it's an ugly apparatus, like it's not pretty, and it takes skill. Not skill. It takes practice, because it's a new thing you got to learn. So it's not automatic. When you get it, you have to spend some time learning to use it. Everyone is learning it from the same starting block, because it's a new thing, right? So everybody's at the same skill level when they get it. There's not somebody who's already like, oh yeah, I can already do this because I've done this. Maybe a little bit, but to the extent, to a degree, it's basically everyone's at the same starting point.
Yeah.
But it's not a self-working, is what I'm saying. So it's not like a Lux where you can just press the button. It's not like a Cognito where they just swipe through themselves. It's not dynamic coins, pro caps, whatever. It's just, it takes some physical, minute, but physical skill. And a lot of people just fucking hate them, you know? So just nervous about it. But at least this is not like a thing where there's all this hype and people don't even know what the fuck it is. They know it's in the index. They know it's for one pocket. They know it's a whole deck of cards. Like, they, so that at least it takes away that, like that.
And you've been very honest about the fact that it's not self-working.
Yeah. 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 But like, yeah, I'm just, the one thing I'm like comfortable with the knowledge of is that like, there used to be like this rabid, incessant, like, we want to know what it, like for Lux and stuff. People were, you know, arguing and fighting and sending like hate emails because they didn't know what it was. So at least that's not, that doesn't exist for this one.
Well, the thing I've learned is you can't make everyone happy. You're going to have people that hate every project.
Oh yeah, I already know that Unbiased Magic Reviews, I don't know, I'm pretty certain. I think he's probably already filmed his negative review on it.
Well, probably, because he was saying negative stuff about it before everyone knew what it was.
Well, he's friends with Don Wallen, so they're boys. So he's got an active interest to you know, promote the other one index over the other. But I mean, I'm still 100% convinced that the Unbiased tag in his name is a parody. It's a joke.
Yeah, because he's so blatantly biased. He really is, which brings us on to a new product. Which is Enigma by Christian Grace. I just had an interview go up on my channel with Christian talking about it. And I know we mentioned it before, but it's now officially released. But since we mentioned it, one of the things that's happened is Unbiased Magic Reviews has put a video up before a day or two before it actually went live. He put a video up all about why I'm not going to buy decks. I'm not going to buy Enigma, sorry.
Yeah. You probably do one of those for decks as well.
Yeah, probably will. Which is a bit of a shitty thing to do, I think, because, like, a reviewer. If you're a reviewer, you should review stuff. You know, I disagree that you should put a full video up talking about why you're not going to buy something on a review channel. Even if you say this is not a review, it fucking is. Your channel is Unbiased Magic Reviews. People come to you. He has his following.
He said he's been shown it in detail, but I don't think he realizes that, like, you know, what is it, like 9 hours of I don't know, whatever it is, but there's so much content and there's also so many different variations of it. It's not just the one performance in person. It's not just the one performance on the internet. There's actually a whole plethora of different ways of doing it, like lexicon node and stuff. Like, people just don't even realize that it's still being developed and updated on to this point. And I put it into my when I heard about what he'd done and watched the video, first of all I was like, that is just really quite vindictive.
Yeah.
For apparently, but again, when you realize the Unbiased thing is a joke, and I think he knows it winds people up because he's biased. When you put it into a different context, imagine a film reviewer putting up a review saying, the reasons I'm not going to watch Avatar 2. A friend of mine has seen it. He's told me all about it. I know the storyline. I know the plot line, blah, 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 blah. For that reason, I know I'm not going to enjoy it. It makes you realize how fucking ridiculous that is. I get that you can have an opinion, obviously, without owning it. But if you're going to be a professional, you know, I said that in air quote, reviewer, then you've got to do your due diligence. Because it carries weight, whether people that are watching realize that it's a joke that he calls himself a bias or not, and whether, like, you know, he wants to be taken as factual, you have to do your research completely.
Yeah.
And by not doing that, it takes, you know, you can't lend any credence to it. It takes away sort of any credibility.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, mate. Completely agree with you.
And it just seems like sabotage.
Yeah.
It's like this heroic thing, the persona that he takes on. I'm trying to save you all from spending your money because I think I wouldn't like it either. Even I know how it works. I've seen it performed. And save your money, guys. okay, well, have you seen the whole product? Do you know everything about it? Have you actually, my, you know me, my thing is, you could, I don't think anyone, if you, if there's, if you, you can't be a reviewer unless you perform the trick. You can't give an honest opinion on it until you perform a trick. I have, I always say, like, Perfect Pen, I didn't think it was going to be very good, and I was going to use that as my baseline on Fooler episodes to say, like, look, this is what happens when Kaylee doesn't like a trick. And I performed it, and it's still to this day one of her favorite tricks that she's performed. And I would never have known that if I didn't do my research, if I didn't actually put the groundwork in and cover all bases and actually do it.
Yeah.
And you, yeah, without, like, you could have an opinion, obviously, on stuff without owning it. But if you're going to be a reviewer, if a reviewer doesn't perform something, then the viewer can only give them a certain element of credibility, or they should only give them a certain amount of respect when it comes to making their own decisions.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I just think it was a really shitty thing to do. But again, this is kind of like his MO. So
yeah, well, he did a review. I can't really comment too much on the trick because I don't own it. But he did a review on Colin Cloud's new ACAM. What's it called? Have you seen
Ocean?
Yeah, Ocean. Yeah, only card exactly at number or something like that. Have you seen the video he did on that? He put it out as a review. Yeah. I can't comment because, but I can comment a little bit, but I don't own the product. But do you know the controversy behind this? Have you followed it on the Magic Cafe?
I know the smallest amount of controversy on it. Something to do with, and I might be wrong, but is it something to do with that it's not any name card? It was just like they pre-select a card or something. Is that the controversy?
Yeah, basically the and I'd love to know your take on this actually. Basically, the argument is the ad copy in the trailer says they name a card. They freely name a card. I think that's the wording that's used. They freely name a card. Something along those lines. But in actual fact, it's a force card. Now, they spend about 2 hours. Sorry, just one second.
Okay.
They spend 2 hours. Sorry, my kids have been really noisy upstairs. So I was just... they spend about 2 hours talking about... and as I say, I haven't seen the tutorial, but from what I've read on the Magic Cafe, Pete Turner and Colin Cloud spend about an hour or two talking about verbal forcing and equivoke and how to actually make the spectator really feel like it's a free choice of card. It's not like they've done something where they go, hey, take a force deck and have somebody to pick a card from that deck and that's the card they're going to pick. You know, you've got two of the best mentalists on the planet talking about how to do verbal forcing. And then the effect is obviously somebody names a number. The card appears at that number. It's got written down on the back of it, the number that that they named. And then it's the only card in the deck that's blank. All the other cards are blank. The controversy comes in the wording of a freely named card, when in actual fact, it's a force card. The other issue behind it is when Christian and Colin went on the Magic Cafe to talk about it from their point of view, people on the Magic Cafe felt they were being very dismissive about people's concerns and that they weren't taking the point that a lot of the cafe were saying about it being a dishonest trailer.
Right, okay.
So Unbiased did a video on this, a review, I think. It might have been a review. It might not have been a review. Let me just quickly go on his channel and tell you exactly. I don't know if it was a review, actually. It could have been. No, it's not a review. It was a warning. Buyer beware. And this is another one. He's not reviewed it. He's not bought it and reviewed it at all. I believe he's just going off what's been said on the cafe. But he said, buyer beware, only card exactly at number by Colin Cloud. And it's a video about why it's dishonest and why people shouldn't buy it, because it's a very dishonest trailer and you're not going to get the truth behind it. It's not, you know, when you buy it based on what the ad copy, it's not going to be what you see. And so
it's such a funny way of phrasing it, though. It just seems like, again, it just seems like it's such an attack. We don't need it. I don't know the situation, right? Like the full dynamics of, I don't know in what way everything was conveyed to people, but it, like, I know some people will describe their ad copy from the point of view of the spectator, because you generally would describe the effect that way, right? So you'd say they name a card, da 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 da, the countdowns cards. And some magicians just are not well versed in ad copy, and they'll write it that way. And then when it comes to the specifics, then they can say, you know, they'll put air quotes or something. Or maybe he's very blatantly, I don't know. Maybe Colin's very blatantly gone out of his way to make everyone think that it's a freely named card, and it's genuinely not. But I don't think it has to be pitchforks and handbags at dawn. I don't think it has to be such an attack. Well, people say,
I had this,
don't buy it. You just have to say, like, hey, heads up. The way I would approach it is this: if I was a magic reviewer, and the ad copy said it's a freely named card, and the truth of the matter was it's actually a card forced, but the number was named. In my review or my video, I'd say, hey guys, just a quick heads up before you go into buying this: it's not a freely named card; it's a card forced. So if you're comfortable with that, go ahead and buy it. Doesn't mean that anyone's like a bad person or it's complete dishonor. I don't know. Maybe, like, it depends on which way Colin approached it before you call it dishonest. Because again, like I said, like the old magic magazines and Magic by Post advertisements, you would often describe things from a participant's point of view, because that's what the effect they witnessed. So there's a lot of ways to go into it, but I just don't have to see why there has to be so much, like, I get that it gets views. I suppose the reason he did the Enigma video before the launch was to capitalize on any attention to try and grow his channel. I get that. It's desperation, and if it works, it works. But you don't have to be so horrible about it. Yeah. Just say, hey, yo, if you bought, you know, just before you buy it, it's a card force. It's not a freely named card. It's a card force.
Now, I'm happy with that. People are going to be listening to this and they're going to say Craig's a hypocrite because he's gone and smashed pads up and like had products, which I have. And that's all come from me spending money on the product, buying it and realizing it's a piece of shit. Anytime you've ever seen me rant about a product, it's because I bought it and I've tried it out and I realize it's massively flawed and it's not fit for purpose.
Yeah.
Like this, which I'm not going to talk about on this channel, but this thing that I'm holding right here, which is going to get a very negative review from me and Ryland, because it's an absolute bag of shit. This is based on the fact that I took it to LNA and I've spent the last 3 weeks playing with it. And yeah. I know. What I haven't done is read the cafe, looked at a trailer, and then made a video based on my feelings. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose the reason everyone gets so riled up about it's his approach to things is it's just you don't have to say things with such like animosity towards the person and make things so there's so much like vitriol.
Well, I did that, like, hey, again,
you know.
And I'm trying not to do it. I can't help
it. Yeah, I think you and him would actually be secret best friends.
Well, mate, I actually said in my video, I think if we sat down in a pub together and had a drink, I think we'd get on like a house on fire. But I don't think that will ever happen. But I think
he'd spit on you.
He probably would. But I can kind of be very sympathetic in many ways with this, because this reminder, I've kept away from this on the Magic Cafe, because this felt like the Quantum Deck in many ways. Because with the Quantum Deck, we made the point in the trailer, hey, you know, I Adam Wilber said, could that be examined? And I said, hey, if you were here, you could examine it. And as you know, people jumped on that. And I had a load of fucking hate, 60-page thread on the Magic Cafe, calling me every single name under the sun because of me saying that the trick's examinable, which to this day, I still believe it is. And we actually talk about why it's examinable. Yeah, exactly. But you know, I had a lot of people, but that's Colin may, that the point I'm bringing that up is how are we to know that Colin doesn't feel like that I've not watched the tutorial. I know that if you get Colin and Pete Turner in the same room as each other, they're two of the best mentalists in the world. And they're spending 2 hours talking about verbal forcing and talking about.
I know Colin a little bit. He texted me asking for something a while, like a month or two ago, but I know Pete Turner really well. Like we're boys. And yeah, Pete can verbally force anything, any playing card, if he wants to. Then, you know, sometimes some of them feel a lot cleaner than others. Sometimes he has to sort of do a bit of verbal gymnastics to get them there. But because of his performing prowess and his ability with his audience, they don't feel, or I've yet to see anyone actively say, you just made me think of that, because he's so brilliant. And I suppose that if, like, he's teaching his verbal forcing method, which works for him, then without sounding like a dick, like, it's not the a person buying the product's fault if they haven't put the practice in to be able to do that. Again, yeah. I could be completely way off on this topic, but
and the other
it's kind of like the deck situation, right? Like, anyone that's had it and using it, me have, and stuff, like, a proficient with it, and it's just second nature, works flawlessly, but it's not going to work for everyone. So am I going to come under the same firing line? Am I going to be placed propped up front because some people are going to not get it right and not have it be able to work for them?
You know that's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. There's going to be people that buy it thinking that they can just shove it in their pocket and immediately they're going to be able to have somebody name a card, and they're just going to be able to pull it out of their pocket, and they're not going to be able to do it, and they're going to be pissed off, and they're going to put negative reviews on.
There's going to be someone out there who's going to perform it very way too quickly, and they're going to fuck it up. They're going to pull out the wrong card.
Put reviews up on Penguin or somewhere like that going, this trick isn't practical in the real world, because at points you're dealing doubles and every spectator would see that. You were there at Smoke and Mirrors filming the trailer where I was doing live performance again and again and again, underneath the spectator's nose, into their hands. Nobody sees anything. The problem with people these days is they make an assumption about a trick, and without actually trying it out or practicing, they go out and do it. They fuck it up because they haven't practiced it to the point that they should have actually got it to before they take it out. And they make calls and judgments on it based on their own inadequacies and stupidity instead of actually spending the time learning the thing. And that comes down to the world that we live in at the moment being, you know, you need it now. You need it now. You know, like, you want, in the olden days, you wanted something. You had to schedule a day to go shopping. You had to go out and get it. You might have had to have ordered it in and go back a few later. These days, I want something. I go on Amazon, I press a button, it's here. These days, I want to get myself a meal from pretty much anywhere. I don't have to drive out and sit down, have a meal, press a button, just eat, boom, it comes. We've got instant gratification in the world that we live in. Everything can happen now. And that's what people expect. You know, people expect to be able to buy a trick and not have to put the practice in and be able to do it. Unfortunately, those are the people that will fuck it up and then complain about it, and also won't even watch the tutorial, because if somebody's buying decks to say, name a card, look, it's in my pocket, then you're doing it fucking wrong, you stupid dick, because that's not how...
I think I actually say in the tutorial, if you perform this, have someone name a card and instantly pull out your pocket, I'm going to fly to your house and fucking strangle you. I think I actually say that. I'm pretty sure that's one of the first things, because it's like 9 hours of tutorial. You'd be very proud of me. 9 hours of tutorial, that's like exclusive.
Oh, I want to come over and give you a big hug.
Don't, you smell. Yeah, 9 hours of tutorial on that shit. But yeah, man, so... but I mean, enough talk about the negative shit. Let's... that's always going to be there.
Yeah.
Right? You're always going to be the arseholes of the world. Well, let's talk about the product itself.
In the last 4 weeks.
Pardon?
Cube 52 has come out since the last podcast.
Oh, I know, yeah. Fuck, that was... Fucking hell, has it been that long? Everyone at Murphy's, myself included, is kind of like, we're all a bit like stood at the edge of a cliff thinking, hang on a minute, there's no bullshit around this. Like, no one's pissed off. We haven't seen any bad reviews at all. The only bad thing we can find anywhere is some people complaining that there's too much tutorial, there's too much stuff taught.
Don't give a fuck about that. Stark Magic Reviews. You follow Stark Magic Reviews.
Which one's...
Start Magic Review. It's a good review channel. It's new.
Okay.
It's really good. He's just reviewed Cube 52. I just watched the video yesterday or a couple of days ago. And he said he does a pros and cons thing at the end, and he goes through all the pros. And then he went for the cons and he said, look, I've tried to find something negative to say about this. And this is probably the only product I've ever reviewed where there's nothing negative to say. This is perfect.
Fucking hell. Fucking hell, fair play, mate. Well, I mean, you deserve it. Like, I'm trying to think back to all the things we said before the build-up, or specifically what I said before the build-up, but it's one of those things that when you realize, oh my God, there's the same number of stickers on a Rubik's Cube as there is as a full deck with two jokers in. And it's one of those products which is like, why hasn't this been made before? And the fact that Phil Smith designed it and put the marking system in, and it's got a stacked marking system if you want to use it too, plus the routines, the ideas, it lends itself to so much Rubik's Cube magic, but it doesn't need a Rubik's Cube. Genuinely, those before, like the Peter Nardi things with like the ESP type routines and the matching effects, it's very hard to find anything wrong. I think, you know, like if you release this with any company, even if it was with a bad company, it would be one of those products where it's kind of like, ah, there's really nothing you can say. It just does what it's supposed to, comes with a bunch of good tricks, proven to work.
Nice work, man. Said to me is, are we going to be able to get refills? Because I'm going to use this deck so much.
Oh, so the deck without the... I suppose we'd have to see what our stock levels look like and what the demand is, because I know we've sold out.
It's cheap enough, realistically.
Yeah, on the surface, it's a deck of cards.
Yeah.
And we'll have to talk about it behind the scenes. I'm sure it can be done. I'm positive it can be done.
Have you seen what Benki Smith has done with it?
No, I haven't.
You know Benki Smith, who created CubeSmith?
Yeah. I was in Budapest years and years and years ago, and I was walking down the street, and I put up like an Instagram post being like, saying like, I'm walking the streets of Budapest or something. And I didn't know Benki at the time, and he sort of messaged me. He's like, hey, let me come and find you. He come and found me on the street, and it was the best thing ever, man. He showed me all these magic apps that he was doing back then. They were amazing, way ahead of their time. And then he took me to an underground like magic theater show, literally in like a basement. I didn't realize it was even going on that day. They like made a big fuss of me. It was just like the coolest experience ever, out of the blue completely.
Well, Benki Smith is
all became friends.
Benki Smith, he's amazing. I'm going to be interviewing him soon on my channel. He's created integration for CubeSmith. He's created a separate product specifically for Cube 52.
That's pretty cool.
Base pattern routine with Cube 52 cards. He's already had it. So he's created this whole new app where...
What's it do?
Well, it does an absolute metric ton of stuff. But I mean, I'll send you the link.
I've already done this.
It's amazing.
I know that white is on
because the cards yellow, are marked on the back. He's basically got this thing which allows you to have them basically. Imagine this. You give someone a cube to shuffle, and then you give the deck to somebody to shuffle, and then they take any 9 cards they want to out the deck, and they put them into a 3x3 grid on the table. They then hand you the cube without you even looking at it, and you put it behind your back and you mix it and you say, I'm going to try and solve it behind my back, and you bring it out and it's not solved. And then he puts it down and he goes, well, there's more than one way to solve a cube. And then
Smart. So is it auto inputting?
Yeah.
Or do you have to, it auto does, like, so
yeah, I believe it does.
And, well, then it's, and then it's what? It's just giving you a cube.
Yeah. And he's got this one face pattern routine. Like, it's just amazing. Absolutely.
Oh, incredible. I need that. I'll perform that on Fula for sure. Because that's a fucking stone cold stunner.
But if you go into the CubeSmith
face, wrestling.
Think about all of the time about this new. Cubes 52 has inspired him to put this thing together called the One Face Pattern add on, which is just the stuff.
Where can I find this?
It's incredible.
Where can I find this?
Go into CubeSmith users. There's a group called CubeSmith users. And there's a ton of people talking about it now.
Okay, I'm doing it. I'm going to join it right now. Okay, I just got a text message. For everyone listening, by the way, we're recording this on a fucking Sunday. Lloyd Barnes is doing something on a fucking Sunday. Just in general, just doing something.
Busy next. See Byman Sam later on.
Yes, well, that's what I say. I got a text saying we have an hour and a half before we leave for Fireman Sam. So we have some products to cover. We could talk about Cube 52, but everyone, dude, it's already a bestseller, sold out. It's being reprinted. Everyone loves it. Cube 52, Cube Smith combined together. But if we want to cover any more topics before I get out of here, or any more products, we gotta do it.
Half an hour at the most. Half an hour, 40 minutes. Okay. Let's have a look at new products. So, do my usual, go on to Penguin. We've got...
we've got Enigma. We should talk about the effect. Instead of talking about the bullshit some people are trying to cause.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I now have it, and I'm going through the tutorials and learning it because I wanted to review it. But Christian did it to me over Zoom, and that made up part of the interview he did with me on Zoom. And it's incredible. It's really great. I still think that it's going to be limited in terms of where you can use it, in terms of, and Christian agreed with me on that. This is something that you have to find the right person, the right place, the right environment. But, you know, I can understand why mind readers are going crazy over this, because it is, in essence, a new way to make people feel like you're reading minds.
Yeah. For me, it's perfect because I don't gig. I don't do stage shows. I absolutely eat, sleep, live, shit, and breathe for situational magic, or the type of magic where you have 10 minutes to sit down with someone in an environment and perform something special. Like, that's the, like, if you listen to the Blackout podcast, it's pretty much all the magic that we talk about. All the creativity stuff is based on that type of magic. So it couldn't be any more tailor-made for me as the performer style that I have. And there's certain elements to it which I just think are, aside from the method being brilliant, and the fact that, again, like, anyone that knows the type of phone magic I love is the type of phone magic where the phone doesn't feel like it's part of the effect. It's just a oh, if you had a pen and paper here, I'd use that, but you don't, so I'm gonna, you know, do this or whatever. But there's something extra to it which I love, which is just that actual connection, the physical connection, the framing of it, the actual, anyone that like sees this, there's a reason why there was so much like excitement about this before it came out. Everyone that watched it be performed or had it performed on them, all over the world as well. It's not just that like it's a incredibly smart method, very well done, and everything's like motivated, but I genuinely think like 50% of the excitement was because it's really like a special piece to have experienced. How many magic tricks do we see at conventions performed by the magicians where it's linear? It's, if like, for example, if it's a card trick, it's pick a card, put it back in the deck, watch me do X, Y, Z, and there it is revealed in some context, right? If it's a mentalism trick, it's usually write this down or peek it, look at this, I'll turn away. Okay, now, do you like hot weather, cold weather? I'm going to read you cold, you want to, and then it's there. It's so rare, and especially combining it like with something like Enigma, the app, even though it doesn't have to be the app, which certainly I can cover in a minute. It's just not very often you have this thing where you actually are connected, you know, your hands to hands, looking at each other's eyes at a height level. That alone is just, I don't know. I think that for the magicians watching, I think that's why it's so exciting, because it's a performance piece as opposed to a trick, you know. There is something about it. And then everything else that comes with it is just intelligent and brilliant. But 100% there's a time and place for this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there is. And I'm definitely going to learn it. I don't know when I'll use it, but I'm sure I will. But it won't be in a gig. It probably won't be in the majority
of
gigs.
I wouldn't imagine you do it table hopping, unless that's the performance style you are. The thing that I'll say is that I know a lot of people talk about it as an app, but I see this as a system 100%, because Chris has been doing it for, I don't know, 6 months, a year. I'm not sure when he started working on it.
Well, he showed session in January, and he'd already got a working prototype and formed it to me then.
I went and helped with some additional footage to film with him a couple of weeks ago, but for the Darren Brown talk thing, and I can't remember if you were there or not. Rich Relish was there, and it's a system. So over time, like, just by like practicing it and performing it, you learn it. And Christian was doing it like just from memory, like no phone involved, just because. And I've seen it quite a lot, and seeing him do it and things. And there was, even I, and like not actively trying to learn it, even I was like, when he was performing it like the third time, I was like, oh, I think I know what this is because of the system. And I was right. And so for me, the exciting part is like seeing Christian, who's obviously the best at it at the moment, to be able to just, if people are like, oh, I don't like it, I like everything about it, but I don't do anything with apps. Like, cool, because you ultimately, you can learn this system, which is really fucking exciting. Any tool like this where you can do some propolis mentalism to keep in your back pocket at all times, it just makes you better. Makes you better. There's no negative to it. There's no negative in learning it. It only makes you improve.
Yeah, I agree.
You never know the one day where, like, I try, whenever I perform, if I ever perform, I try to do the best trick for that situation. I'm not someone that's going to go in and do and just force feed someone a trick that I can feel isn't the right vibe. And you never know when you're going to be in the situation where that is the trick that's going to, you're going to, you know, if you're interested in doing TV, you're going to perform it to a TV executive unknowingly. And it's going to boost you. It's going to change your life. You know, you never know when it's going to be, you perform it to that one person who ends up referring you for every gig for the next year or, but you know, I think to learn as many things like this as possible and to have them on you, it's only a positive.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
And in fairness, I think a lot of people, or not a lot of people, the amount of people, the batch of people that have been like annoyed about this, I think generally are the people that get annoyed through like any hype campaigns. You see the same names cropping up on the same threads. But in fairness to Christian, like I don't feel like he hyped this. You didn't see him chiming in. You didn't see him posting about it all over the internet and telling people to brace themselves. Like, didn't seem to do what I fucking did by accident, with like partially by accident, or like now looking back, maybe not the best approach with like luck, you know, self-admittedly. All of this hype came from people seeing him do it on stage at Minds Convention, at the 4F convention, people watching Christian perform it and then going off and sharing their experience without being told. And for some reason, like, that annoyed people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The killer question is, do you think it's worth the price tag?
I mean, the other day, and he said, I haven't spent a penny on marketing for this. Not a penny. All I've done is I've just gone out and performed it to a ton of people, and they've done all the work for me.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, right? If it wasn't good, Christian's such a lovely human being. Like, he's such a pure soul. But they would have done this for all of his tricks, right? If they were just doing it because he's nice, they didn't. They're doing it for this one because this is the one that people have fallen in love with. And I think, you know, when you realize that, like, you can understand that it wasn't some weird hype campaign, you know, that was masterminded by him. He was just performing it to anyone who would watch because he's proud of it and it does what it's supposed to.
Yeah.
But I think the killer question is, do you think it's worth the price tag?
Well, I mean, it's expensive, but yeah, it is expensive. I mean, but I imagine he spent a lot of time and effort and money getting that to where it is. I know he's had to have an entire server for it. And, you know, he's not like charging a subscription fee. So the price that he's charging is going to be also to upkeep and constantly make sure the app's working like it's meant to. So I can understand why what the price is. I mean, I try to keep things as cheap as possible. You know, Cube 52, 30 quid, you know, Gate, 35 quid, Gatekeeper, 20 quid, 25 quid. But there's been so much time and effort and work and cost from Christian's point of view gone into this. And you got to remember, he's not working with another company. He's financing it all himself.
Yeah, that's the difference, I think. And the big one is, on the outset, initially, it seems like a bit pricier, even though it's not as expensive as some apps. There are some apps out there, like iLocking Mine was 300 quid, and you know, some other ones that are like £1,000. I know of an app that's £1,000, a magic app. But the upkeep is where initially it might seem like a lot now, but over time, he really is going to eat into those profits, keeping the app updated, because he's doing it on cross-platform, so Android and Apple. And those need to be updated, I don't know, every 3 to 6 months, there'll be a new bug fix where the operating system's had a beta update or a 0.1 update. And paying for an update can cost in any region between, I don't know, if it's one tiny fix, maybe 200 quid. If it's a fairly decent overhaul or fairly few number of bug fixes, then you're looking at £500 to £1,000 per time, right? And that's for one platform. So like Cognito is and Maxima both need updates now. Josh has been in the US for the last month on his vacation. So he's coming back now. I think it's been potentially 3 or 4 months since the last like minor bug fixes, right? So let's just say, let's just find the middle ground. Instead of saying every 3 months, let's say every 4 months, this app Enigma on both platforms is going to need to be updated. That's, what's that like? Let's say 6 times per year. So he's going to have to pay 6 times per year to keep this updated. Depending on the scale of the bug fixes, that's a couple of grand a year just fixing the bugs.
Yeah.
Just fixing bugs. Could you think of any other magic trick product out there, not apps, where you have to pay that sort of money continuously?
No, not at all.
Q52 from Murphy's, they just have to reorder it, right? The print run. If you buy coin sets, is it going to cost Peter Nardi every year a couple of grand per year to keep them up and running?
Nope. Not.
So when you break it down, I think that you realize, and also like this is self funded too. I actually think the fact that it's not even the most expensive app out there, and I think when you do things independently, it's worth like supporting the creator a bit with a bit extra. I try to. I don't think 150 quid is, and it's not a subscription based thing. I think 150 quid is a drop in the ocean.
Yeah, I agree.
Plus, look at the effect you're getting. This is the same trick which has magicians globally, the ones that have seen it performed and experienced it being performed, raving about it. This is the trick that got like a stand ovation at Minds Convention. That audience didn't do that just because they like him.
People in the room at Minds Convention is incredible when you're doing reading, you know.
So, you know, but then it's the cynical types that it's never going to satisfy them. I know some people that will just... That can't bring themselves to give something high with the highest price tag, you know, the time of day. And I understand that. Not everyone's in the same boat. I used to be very against high ticket items. Even now, I'm trying to make all my stuff affordable. But I do understand that if I'm gonna owning this, I would get my 150 quid's worth out of it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I buy so little magic that it's always like a considered purchase for me, even if it's like £3 deck of cards. I'm so picky about the magic I buy that if I've decided I want something, I've decided for a long time that I want it, and I don't really give a fuck if it's like £100 or £10,000. If I want it, it's worth it to me because I know I've thought about it.
Yeah,
I definitely want Enigma because I know I'll use it.
I know you will. This has got Lloyd Barnes written all over it.
Very much like my style if I have one. So yeah, I think it's a good product, but I can see why some people wouldn't be interested in it at all.
Yeah, exactly. Especially somebody who's just gigs and just does gigging over and over again and that's it.
Yeah. And like if someone's a coin guy and they never do this type of stuff, but they're just caught up in the excitement of it. But then they sit down and think, would I actually stop my set and perform this? If they think no, honestly, then don't buy it. It doesn't mean it's a bad product. Just don't buy it. But yeah. I love it.
Christian's been very honest about exactly what it is and the limitations as well, which is very good.
I feel like I should start a channel called Biased Magic Reviews.
Sure. And then the irony is you're actually unbiased.
Yeah, that's it. I think this is one of those things that like, even if I didn't like the creator, it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, and I would be honest about that. Turns out Christian's lovely.
Yes, he is one of the nicest people in magic. Other stuff that's come out recently, we're not going to go about 4 weeks because that's insane, but other stuff that's come out recently, this is another one that's caused a little bit of controversy, Lloyd. The Real Watch by Uday. I don't know if you've seen that. It's come out very, very recently.
I think it's in the trailer. Has it got Javier in the trailer?
Yes. Yeah, I think it might have. I can't remember. But there's been a bit of controversy over this as well, on purely because, yeah, it has got Javier. I've just checked the trailer. It's basically an ITR reel built into what looks like a smartwatch. You've got two versions, one that's black around the outside, one that's fake stainless steel. The controversy comes that Mark Travassoni from Saturn Magic has actually had it in his hands, played around with it, and said that it's terrible. The quality is terrible, and it makes a loud noise. Whilst yours and my favourite friend, Luke Dancy, from All Things Magic, has looked at it and said, actually, it's brilliant. I can't believe it's the price that it is. It should be worth a lot more. And he did a video, an unlisted video, where he took the watch and he had a microphone right next to it, and he started pulling the reel out back and forth and showing that it made no noise. And he pointed out that if you drag it out like this, it's going to make noise. But if you use it like a magician would, where you just pull it out slowly, there's no noise. And he had a microphone right next to it. So you've got two fairly well-respected magic dealers. You know, everybody knows my thoughts on Luke, but, you know, he's been around the industry a long time. And Luke, and you know, you got Mark Travassoni, and the two of them are saying completely opposite things about this product as magic dealers. It is very inexpensive. You know, when you consider it's a fake smartwatch and it's a real, the whole thing is
$40.
$40. $40.
$40. Fucking hell, like at $40, I would hope it's not incredible quality in a way. $40, I'm like, yeah, this thing's gonna be a bit ropey, if it is even. But $40.
Yeah, $40. It's interesting having the reel built into a watch. Because obviously Yigal Masika's bought out the Spider Pen these days, and a lot of reels these days, and Miranda bought out Gravity. So a lot of the reels these days are in different places. But the old ITR reels used to be put up the up your sleeve. That was one of the places that it was, you know, I remember...
I've also, the idea of a real watch, a watch with a reel built into it, is at least a decade old.
Yeah, it's been around. It's been,
at least a decade old. Because I remember I designed one a while ago, only to be told, oh, so-and-so is working on this. So-and-so has this idea, and they're coming out with it some point in the future. And I was like, oh, so I like tossed it aside. So, yeah, I wonder, maybe Mark's version is 10 times worse than the one Luke got in his hands. The thing is, it's the magic industry. So we're not Apple, we're not Sony and Panasonic and Samsung. A lot of this stuff, even when it's like made in a factory, like I think did you say this is by Uday, this one?
Yeah.
I think he's based in India. Like, yeah. Is he in India? Like,
yeah.
These are not, you know, multi-billion dollar factories that have, you know, incredible robotics that make everything pinpoint precision out of titanium and things. A lot of this stuff is generally made by molds and then assembled by hand and put out there into the ether. It's very hard to make like precision perfect magic products, especially if you're trying to do it at a price range which is competitive, like $40. If this was a $250 product and there was issues with it, or if this was a $1,000, I know like a lot of the $1,000 electronics or multi-$100 electronics, they are normally a much higher quality, because you're paying that extra price tag. But when it's $40, there's a reason for that. And I wouldn't be annoyed if there was some. Well, you shouldn't be expecting it or be annoyed by the fact that if there is issues. But if there's no issues, like Luke is saying, and we know Luke can often cause issues for no reason too. And if he's saying there's no issues at the same time, faulty batch maybe for Mark or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm blown away by the price tag.
Yeah, blown away. Absolutely blown away. The only other thing that's worth talking about is Lucid by Roddy McGee is now officially available from Penguin Magic.
Yeah, love that. Super visual.
Yeah.
I keep getting fooled. I've seen like quite a lot of different performances on it, and I'm fooled multiple times. Like sometimes, like, like there's a lot of like really smart ditching or reproductions that have happened with it. And
well, you get multiple. With it, so you get a supply of the bags, but you get multiple gimmicks that you can fit into
different
Acts 1 has black art built into it, so you can do an appearance. If you're wearing black behind you, you can literally have something appear. One of them is designed to make something disappear. One of them is designed to make something change. And then there's various different routines you can do. Nick, obviously from Penguin Magic, he does it better than anyone I've ever seen. Like, I was on the Magic Live booth with him at Magic Live, and he was doing Lucid over and over again. And I was just watching from the side and getting fooled over and over again. I'm watching him put a card in a bag. I'm watching that bag. I know what's coming up, and I see it vanish. And then you look down at the mat in front of him, and it's there lying on the mat. And
that's one of the videos that caught me, like, because I assume I know to an extent how the gimmick works.
Insertion.
The practical performance, yeah, the insertion. And then when it's like, oh, there it is. I was quite pleasantly surprised. Really, really cool. Really good. I'm totally going to get one.
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. And there's lots of live performances on the trailer, on the tutorial, where they go through everything with a fine-tooth comb. The only thing that I'd say to people is it's not as easy as you would think. It's going to be a little bit knacky to get it right. It's not hard. You'll be able to do it straight away. But in order, and you'll literally, as soon as you get it, you'll have the bag, you'll watch the first 5 minutes, and you go, oh, look, it can vanish. Oh, look, it can come back. But in actual, to get it to a point where you can perform it confidently in front of an audience, when I was at Penguin on the booth, they said, hey, you know, if you want to, you can dem Lucid. And I'm like, I haven't got it. And they were like, okay, we'll give you one. And they gave it me the day before. And I spent a couple of hours playing around with it. And I just turned around to Sean and I was like, man, I don't feel comfortable demming this after just playing with it for a couple of hours. I don't want people to be turned off from buying it because my performance is a little ropey. I've watched the whole tutorial. I've played around with it. It's something that I probably would be happy to go out and do in a live show. And since then, I've actually taken it to a few gigs. But in terms of, I did it yesterday actually, but in terms of going and doing it to magicians and demming it for people to spend $60 on it, I'd rather leave it to Nick and Eric to do, to be perfectly honest, because I don't think I'm at that point yet. So yeah, so it's something that takes a bit of practice, but it's not difficult. It's just something that you need to do if you together, especially the thing that you're talking about, because basically it's a false insertion and then your gambler's copying it as you bring it up and showing the other card, and then you're just dropping your hand down on the table and you're leaving it there, which is all fine and well and good, but it's practice. It's the sort of thing where you have to do it a few times to have confidence doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I that's not a negative to me in this day, but to some people it is. But that's fine. I think I saw a lot of the like decision making that I put into products these days is if I look at it and I like how what the effect is, then my thinking is that I'm going to buy that and like do whatever it takes to learn the ability or overcome any hurdles to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, so sometimes like you'll see a product come out and it'll be like, you'll completely, you'll see someone buy it, right? And then they buy it and they're like, oh, well, I got it, but you know, this bit's knacky, or I can't do that, or it's not, it's flimsier than I thought it was going to be, or it's this and it's that. But then you look at the magician who's released it and you see they're just performing it over and over and over and over. And they, you know, whatever product it is, theirs is no different to the one that gets into the, oftentimes, and I've noticed this a lot, often the version of the trick or the gimmick that the magician has is normally in a bit of a worse condition than the one that actually ends up in the hands of the audience, of the people that are buying it, the purchasers. And I think a lot of times it's just that people buy something expecting it to, you know, do the whole thing for them, or if there's a slight hiccup or a snag they don't like, or one little thing about it which throws them off, or they perform it once and the performance goes bad, then they tend to like want to actively shit on it and blame everything but themselves. And I keep thinking, and I see the more I get older, you know, I keep thinking, well, hang on, that guy, that's not, he can do it. If he can do it that well, I will be able to do it that well.
Yeah.
As long as it's not a situation where I can think of the thing, but where the product they actually get in their hands is nothing like the one that was advertised. But
seen that.
But ultimately, like a lot of times, I've
seen that a couple of times.
But yeah, I think a lot of times, so many people are so quick to shit on a product when it's just they haven't done the due diligence, or they're not, like, I know we shouldn't have to, but I do feel like, again, I keep saying this, like, this is most of the products come on the market these days are by independent creators, or they are like being made, like these magic companies, even they don't have their own specific factories with their tailor-made machinery for each thing. A lot of this is like, okay, we're going to make a foam Rubik's cube with a rubber shell. Then they'll go, okay, we need to find somebody who specializes in foam and rubber. So we're going to go find the person over here. And then that person will go, oh my God, I only make foam and rubber for doors and windows, but I suppose I could try and make it work. And then they'll go off and they'll, you know, a lot of times it's like working on the fly with new people all the time. And then you see someone put all their effort into making something and it's incredible, you know, by my standards, but somebody will get it and shit on it because they're expecting like Apple quality.
Yeah.
You know? And it's frustrating. And I just think that, like, you see the whingers and the babies of the industry these days. And then you look at the magicians that come before us and you go through the history books, you go to the magic museums, you look at some of the props that are out there in the world that have come before us. And these magicians were working with stuff which is not fit for purpose, even by like my standards. I think I can make almost a lot of my gimmicks, I make a ropey anyway, right? But you see like some of the props, you know, the magicians that come before us, old Sonata gimmicks, the type of thumb tips they would even use, the things like card holdouts and things that are rusty with broken springs and the seams and are split open, and they were performing and smashing the fuck out of their audiences with this stuff. And you get people that complain that something isn't absolutely miniature perfect. You think the issue isn't the product, mate? Let's be honest. The issue isn't the product, is it?
Nope. Not at all. Not at all. It's true. It's absolutely true. People, it's like I said before earlier in this podcast, people want instant gratification and they expect everything to be self-work. It's
entitlement, it is. As soon as somebody spends more than one penny on something, they think that they are owed the world.
Yeah. Put some effort in. Put some time in. It's the same with getting gigs. But you know, I've had a few people reach out to me recently going, how do you get more gigs? I want more gigs. I want more gigs. How do I get more gigs? And I literally go through it with you. Okay, so first of all, you have to do this. Then 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 this, then this, then this, then this, then this. And I give them a list of 15 things that they need to do, none of which requires money. All of which requires time. And they're like, well, that seems like a bit like hard work. Well, yes, it fucking is. You know, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, you stupid dick. You know, man up and fucking learn the trick if it's difficult. You know, just
it
learn.
It doesn't annoy me too much because I think then, like, it's much easier internally, like within the industry, for the people who are worth their weight in gold to be separated from just the people that are not asked. But the issue I have with people like that is that those people end up performing to laymen, and most of those laymen have never seen close-up magic before in their lives. And they see someone perform magic badly, and they just assume that is magic. And that's what pisses me off, you know, when people's first experiences of magic are seen, they watch someone who doesn't want to practice, who one of those babies off the magic cafe, people like that. And it's just fucking demoralizing. But I suppose then when you do get to perform for them, they get that same experience of, you know, they'll get a good experience. I don't know.
Well, I think that's everything, man, in terms of products. I don't think there's anything else out.
I've seen that there's a new Kickstarter for beginners with it's got Ben Earl in it, but I don't really see this as like something for the magic community because everything and more is on Ben Earl's The Family subscription. It is geared towards complete. I know they try and say, yeah, if you're a pro, you should buy this too, but really, like, just subscribe to his to his family?
I've been having a bit of a back and forth between somebody in particular who I'm not going to mention and me on the Magic Cafe. And I've made my thoughts there clear. I'm sure that if Ben's involved in it, it'll be brilliant. There's no question that if Ben's involved in it, it's going to be phenomenal. I think that you could probably be better served just getting a subscription to the family.
Well, this seems like there's just like infinitely more hours of content, and it's just a product for, that's not for magicians, like active magicians. It's a product for, I know they're trying to like rope people in, but I really just can see, you know, between it, it's just for not. I don't think that that's worth talking about. I'm trying to see what else is out there. I seen the WBD, the water balloon dropper, is it? I haven't actually watched the video yet.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. It's a Hanson Chen thing, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Luca Volpe brought out psychology as well.
Is this about psychology?
Yeah. It's their version of psychology. Five different coloured velvet bags are shown, placed open end down, completely covering five drinking glasses. The audience is informed that one of the bags contains a high denomination banknote. Despite the best efforts and completely free choice of up to four separate spectators, the performer is left with the one bag and glass containing the prize money from the very start. No equivoque, 100% surefire every time, and for the first time with this effect, all five bags can be turned completely inside out afterwards and shown completely empty.
Blimey. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Sounds good. And Luca Volpe is brilliant. Normally, anything he brings out is really good.
Yeah, it's super. I'm trying to think, is that everything? I'm pretty sure it's everything.
I don't see anything else. I'm just Carson's drink has come out, which is sold out at the moment. Came out about 3 weeks ago. It's basically a version of the levitating glass. Imagine being in a bar and someone's having a drink and you can make that glass float in an elegant, magical way in front of the spectator. So it's a little bit like a zombie gimmick, but you can use any borrowed glass instead of a you know, like a ball. So there's that. That's fairly interesting. Capsize came out by Seth Race, but we kind of briefly talked about that when we talked about Magic Live, so there's no point talking about that again.
Well, fuck it. We're struggling to find stuff to talk about now, so let's go on to Sorry Not Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing that did come out, by the way, is POW, Perfect Oil and Water by Eric Casey. I very briefly mentioned that when I talked to you about Magic Live. It's the oil and water. Have you seen it? Have you seen Jackie Yuda?
Yeah, it's so good. But I do think we covered it.
Oh, did we? Okay. Well, there's nothing else then. Sorry, not sorry. But Fime and Sam to go and get to. So, Sorry, Not Sorry. Rick Lax is a dickhead. Last time I had this, I had 25 messages on my phone.
You shouldn't be spending your time talking about me. You should be talking about child sex exploitation.
Yeah, it's like the two of you.
It's a magic podcast. It's not your fucking browser history. Like, fucking get over it. You're exposing other people's material to lay people for your likes. You're not even adding anything to it. Do you know what I mean? It's not like there's no excuse for it.
I'll say it again. I'm a fan of Rick Lax's magic, and I can respect what he's managed to achieve on social media. You know, I know how hard it is to create any traction on social media, and the fact that he is where he is with Justin Flom, my hat's off to you. The fact that you've created stuff and throughout your career have done really big things. You know, you worked with Penguin, you've released some huge stuff. Congratulations, Rick. But it doesn't mean that you can just blatantly expose stuff. And you did this with Tenyo's Mr. Danger. And there was no need to do that because there's just no need. It's not fair to Tenyo. It's not fair to Murphys who carry the product. It's not fair to anyone who's bought it or anyone who's planning on performing it, either live or on social media, for you to literally just expose how the trick works. And then I pointed that out to you. Lloyd pointed that out to you. You said that we were being mean and we were calling you names, which we did. We called you names. But there's a difference between a dickhead and doing a dickish thing. I'm not saying that you're a complete dickhead. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that would say that. I'm not saying you're a complete dickhead. But you seem to have this ability to do stupid stuff over and over again without learning from your mistakes. And that's something I can relate to. But you've done it again. You've taken, you know, the button project by Matt Wright put it out of Blackpool. I was on the project. It's the two copper, one silver, or the copper, silver, brass with a washer, a button, and a poker chip. It's great. It's fantastic. It was created by Mark Southworth, who has now passed away. It's the last trick that he bought out before he passed away. And you literally just exposed the gimmick. You just showed the button and the washer. You put them together. You turned it round to camera in a 12-minute reel and showed that it was a poker chip. There was no need to do that. Other than getting likes and views, there was no need to do that at all. And it's just pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic seeing where you were in your position in the community and how you have sold yourself out in order to just for money. I don't see any other reason.
The crazy thing is he didn't apologize last time and you're bang on. He sold out. He sold out 100%. And I think he's pretending he's offended by that to try and reserve some form of self-respect or integrity. But the other part of it is like he's a brilliant thinker. Imagine he's come up with some really, really good stuff. Some not so good stuff, but some really good things as well. It's just pathetically lazy for someone like him to just do that for views and likes. And then, like, okay, in an alternate universe, you could potentially, if he wanted to be forgiven, he didn't even apologize, so he doesn't want to be. But for exposing that as the danger thing, there's mental gymnastics that he attempted that ultimately got a zero on the score, but he could have done some mental gymnastics and try to convince us that it was a mistake and not us. I mean, the magic fraternity that it was a mistake and that he's sorry for it. But then he just went and did it again. And to make it even worse, it's the last release from somebody who's passed away as well.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing that really annoys me. And last time he said it was a toy. It's a toy. Who performs Tenyo? Well, I'm pretty sure a lot of people perform with those buttons because it's the best version of copper, silver, brass I've ever seen.
It's incredible.
Ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous that he would think that's acceptable. And like you say, you know, to do this to somebody this is his legacy. This is his last trick that he's ever. I don't know. There's no words. There's nothing I can say about Rick Lax that we haven't said.
I just think it's this, right? It's a really cunty thing to do. I said this before. Maybe he's not a cunt. No, no one of it. But it's a really cunty thing to do the first time. It's even more of a cunty thing to do the second time. It's no black and white about that. You can be upset about it, but it's right. But I think at this point, just don't get involved. Like, we're going, magicians around the world have essentially the same viewpoint on it, unless they're trying to do the same thing. Really shit thing to do, but don't be involved in the magic industry. If you're going to do that, we can't stop you. But don't get upset with us. Don't bother trying to talk to us. Don't bother trying to fucking reason it or do mental gymnastics, even though he's not even apologetic for the first time. Just fucking stay in your own lane.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. Because what he wants is he wants his cake and he wants to eat it. If you want to be this anti-magician, you want to be going around exposing everything, fine, be my guest, do it, go ahead, no problem. But then don't be within the magic community. And this isn't about YouTube exposure or the other, but this is a reel. This is a 12-second reel that shows up on TikTok and on everywhere. You know, without you searching for it, you're just going to see this. This is a completely different thing to YouTube exposure, which I don't think is an issue at all. You know,
but there's a difference. There's exposure and there's teaching. And this is like I see between, we talked about this with Justin Miller on the podcast a couple of months ago, a year ago maybe. There's a discussion between him and Xavier Spade and Chris Ramsey, and I think they summed up brilliantly. It's like, you ain't stopping people exposing magic, right? You can pay bounties to 13-year-old kids, or you can cry about it on magic groups and forums, but it's not going anywhere. But the one thing you can do is take control of the direction. So instead of people going on YouTube and seeing how a double lift works, you can teach people how double lifts works properly so that they can learn it and perform themselves. And the people that are going on to specific, I don't think people realize how difficult it is to get people to watch a video. But I'm going off on a different tangent. We could talk about this all day. But yeah, and the way I see it is Rick Lax has, you know, some good credentials behind him. And he is, you nailed it on the head. He's completely sold out. And there's no debate in that. And maybe he might try to do that. And yeah, I know he's a lawyer, so he'll probably out-debate me with his social circle and his friends will back him up. But he's sold out. So don't get upset when you get called on it.
Yeah.
Did something super cuntish. Again. Repeat pattern of behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't be sending me fucking voicemails complaining about it.
If you're listening to this, Rick, I don't want to hear voicemails about why I'm an asshole and why I've treated you this way. This is the Magic Podcast. We talk about stuff that's happening within magic, and what's happening at the moment is you're an asshole, and that's all I've got to say about that. And if any messages come through from you, I'll delete them, and I don't want to hear from you until you do a video on your channel, like apologizing, saying I'm sorry, I'm such a cunt. Just fuck off. You know, you're done. I don't want to know.
There really isn't much more to say on it.
No. There really isn't.
I'm trying to think what I'd be thinking if I was in his position right now.
I just
need people to like me, so I'm going to show other people's tricks, but I also want magicians to like me, so I'm going to tell them to talk about sex exploitation instead of talking about me instead, and that will keep the wolves at bay.
I think he's probably just thinking about his next video, because it's all about the money with him, which is a shame, but that's the way it is.
I hope he exposes one of my things. He hasn't already.
He probably has, and we just don't know about it.
Although I'm like, so Lloyd's a cunt too, so he does it. But I embrace it. I admit it. It's true. Honestly.
That's funny. Talking about, actually, I don't think we need to talk about this. Have you seen the bounty thing from Illusionist?
I haven't read it, but there's a lot of people pissing themselves laughing at it.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot.
It's hilarious. It's so funny. And we don't really talk about Illusionist on this channel. We don't have to say anything. We don't have to.
Well, I just think this. I think there's just different subsections. Like, we don't talk about stage magic. We don't talk a lot about like hypnosis and gambling stuff. They are a magic company for children. This is just campaigning to get children on side. I don't know, they have some great people that do releases with them sometimes, like Ben Earl's working with them now and stuff, but ultimately it's not really, I don't think it's anything that's worth us. It's not really in our wheelhouse, you know what I mean?
Really not.
The whole bounty thing, I think kids will probably fucking chew that up and they fucking have fun with that. Good on them. They've got to get their target audience back on side, so let them do it.
Yeah, that's it.
And there might even be some good in it. There might even be some good in it.
We will see. The jury's out. We'll see how they we'll see what happens. I think I know what's going to happen, but you know, we'll see.
What happens if I expose my own trick that they're selling on?
Oh no, they're
going to have to report myself
exposing Illusionist's intellectual property.
But so, they've got some of my tricks on their site.
Well, do an experiment. Expose one of them that's on you on the site, because it's your trick.
I know.
Yeah, but if it's their intellectual property, they might try and take you down.
Oh my gosh! But it's my idea. Oh no, we're in this gray area.
I know it's, but it's yeah. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I think there's a lot.
I think, you know, if I had hundreds of 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds watching my site, I would be encouraging them to practice and spend their time doing that.
Yeah.
That'd be more valuable probably to them.
As to sending out emails about how much you make or don't make, how much royalty payments that you pay out, talking about playing cards being dead, talking about the industry being dead, talking about needing to have bounty hunters to go and track down the people that are exposing illusionists IP. Yeah, all of this stuff. Yeah, they're making a few weird decisions when it comes to blogs and emails and any content at the moment. But I talked about that on my channel. We don't need to talk about it now. Everyone knows my viewpoint on illusionist assholes. But they do occasionally have a good idea.
But I think they're wonderful.
I know. You love them.
I think they're brilliant.
Wearing an illusionist t-shirt now. I love illusionist.
I am. I actually got it tattooed. I actually got it tattooed on my dick. I love the illusionist playing card company.
There you go, you see. There you go. That's dedication. That's dedication.
It's true. Brilliant.
Great. I don't think there's anything else to say. Other than it's been great to do this. I'm sorry that we've been absent for the last 4 weeks. Don't forget.
I'm not sorry. I've been living a life of fucking Riley, mate. I've been living the dream. What a fucking great summer.
Just when you think you're out, I come and drag you back in.
In case this is true, it's actually raining outside for the first time in the last month. So just in case you're wondering why I'm doing this, because I'm not on the beach. You're the only reason you got me to.
Well, if we ever miss another week again, and I'll try not to. I always try
to. It's me that's missed them. I think you need a new host to take over from me for good.
It's not going to happen.
Please relieve me from my duties.
Never going to happen, Lloyd.
Why don't you get someone that gives a fuck?
That's part of the appeal of having you and me. It's never going to fucking happen. I don't mind bringing Tyler and Pig Cake in occasionally and, you know, having them here, but there's nothing that matches you ultimately, you know. Oh, I heard from my sources that we're going to be doing the podcast live again this year at Blackpool.
Oh, I'm not doing it. Last year was the fucking... Honestly, I walked off stage and Kaylee was like, that was absolutely humiliating.
Yeah, it was. I'm a bit sober this year.
I'm not doing it again. I'm busy. I'm not even going to Blackpool.
Are you? Don't lie.
I'm not, no.
You're not going to Blackpool?
What day do they want you to do the podcast live?
I think they want us to do it on the same day, which is the Thursday.
I get it on the Friday. Fuck. Yeah, I can't do it. Sorry. Anyway, so, huh?
We'll switch it around. We'll make it work.
I'm not doing it live. I'm not. I said to Kaylee, I can't.
It was a debacle last year. It was an absolute. Well,
the audio guy was fucking furious.
I know. Greg. Oh yeah. He was a bit unhappy. Yeah. No.
So many people walked out. You know that.
Yeah, I'm aware. It wasn't our finest hour.
it was shit.
I blame it on Bob. Bob didn't turn up.
Bob's dead.
Is he dead?
He died that night on stage.
yeah, it was, you know, everyone has highs and lows. You know, we had our really good first year, then we had our tricky second year, and we'll bounce back on the third year.
I'm busy. Super busy. Got stuff to do. I'm busy collecting all the dust out of the pockets of my jeans to turn into a little paper mache. Or well, for my kid. So
important. That sort of stuff is important.
But we could get a stand-in.
A stand-in. We should.
Yes.
What we should do is we should definitely do the podcast meetup again, because that was so many people said that was useful at the House of Secrets the night before.
But yeah, I don't mind doing that again. I'll do that again.
Yeah, that was good.
But we're not doing it live. Well, I'm not doing it live. You could send someone.
What about?
It's got to be other Welsh people.
I've got an idea. How about we do a combined one-off magic podcast and black arts podcast? It can be you, me, and Jake.
I'm not going on stage. I did my lecture, did the podcast live. I'm going to Blackpool as a punter next year. I genuinely had a, it was amazing. I genuinely didn't enjoy Blackpool last year.
Eras like a star, did you? Like with the lecturing and everything, that wasn't your wheelhouse.
I love hanging out. It was a thing like, I really wanted to sit down and jam magic. That's why I go to conventions. I love fucking just sitting down, hanging out, seeing new tricks. And I didn't get that opportunity. So I said it since then, like in all fairness, I have said since we come back, since like the day I come back, like I'm not doing Blackpool like that next year. I'm going as a punter only. You look so sad. Oh, you're like a little shaved testicle with a frown. Oh, don't do that. Don't do that face. No. Oh, don't. He's putting pop lip out and everything. Not going to work. No. Listen, Penfold. It's not fucking happening.
What's Jake up to at Blackpool?
He's going to do the podcast live with you, the Magic Podcast Live.
You heard it here first.
Sorry, Jake. I apologize if you're listening. You've just been... I'm subbing you in. I know. I nominate you as tribute. See if you can do it. All right, I'm going to go. I'm going to watch Fireman Sam.
You go watch Fireman Sam. We'll be back next week if Lloyd can be bothered. I can't guarantee he'll be around, but
I will.
But hopefully he'll be around next week. And we'll be back. Don't forget to follow us on all your favorite podcasting platforms so that you know when we go live, which is rarely. And don't forget to go on the Magic Podcast Facebook discussion group where you'll never see Lloyd post, hardly at all. He's blocked pretty much everyone in Magic anyway and only has 15 followers on Facebook, so don't even try and interact with him in any way, shape, or form. But we'll be back next week. And in the meantime, you can get your weekly Lloyd fix by going to the YouTube channel, Lloyd's YouTube channel, which I hear has just hit 70,000 subscribers, right?
It has. And you can get a fill from Craig multiple times a day from Craig Petty's Magic TV over on YouTube.
There you go.
And check out the Netflix too. I hear that's been crushing it lately.
It's all right, but it's not Society of Secrets.
It's better. We should combine them into one. The Society of Netrix.
Society of Netrix. Let's do it.
Netrix of sheep.
My God. You go and see Fireman Sam. We'll be back again next week, hopefully. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Craig.
I'm Lloyd.
Don't forget, you sign off.
Shit week, you cunt.
Again, it feels like you're just saying it to me, but I'll let it go. I'll let it go.
I was. I wasn't.
We apologize for disrupting your normal daily schedule. You may now relax, tuck your deck back in, and resume your regular day-to-day life. Remember to subscribe to be notified the moment each new episode goes live every Wednesday. And join our Facebook group to continue the conversation. The link is in the description to this podcast. Thank you for listening to The Magic Podcast.